You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Joe Crawford.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, February 28th, 2017.
That the gestures of just an individual when it's coupled together with other folks and the gestures of businesses, there's not any entity out there that can't participate in reducing their carbon impact.
We speak with the creator of the Community Carbon Exchange, Joe Davis, later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Everyday People, our weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
A two-year state budget proposal is moving on to the Indiana Senate. The Indiana House of Representatives has approved a $31.4 billion plan. The budget is expected to generate a surplus of $115 million in 2018 and $252 million in 2019. Some of the money would come from a tax hike on cigarettes, an additional $1 per pack, which would raise the tax to nearly $2. That would bring Indiana above the national average tax of $1.69 per pack, according to the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Representatives in favor of this budget highlight that it would help pay for Medicaid spending and programs to help Hoosiers quit smoking. Representative Jeff Ellington says cigarettes affect every Hoosier household financially, regardless of whether or not they are smokers.
Coming from a family who's had generations of tobacco growers, and I understand from the planting to the cultivation to the sale of that product, that it has a impact upon every Hoosier household, and that household amount is $900 per year that cost us to pay back in for those items that are associated with COPD and other ailments from cigarettes. So to me, this just puts the money towards the expenses we have or it's related.
Ellington says one purpose of including this tax hike in the budget is to save money used for health care by hopefully helping Hoosiers kick the habit.
It will hopefully reduce smokers' habits, which in essence will reduce the cost to our state government for Medicaid and other medical funds.
But Indiana Democrat Matt Pierce says the hopes for additional Medicaid funding are misguided.
The bill says that that money should be spent on health care or basically put into the Medicaid fund. What's really happening is it's a big shell game to move money around to fund our roads. So the cigarette tax money will bring about $300 million in if it's increased. That can be put in the Medicaid fund. Then $300 million will be taken out of Medicaid, put into the general fund, and then that general fund money will be applied to roads.
Studies show cigarette taxes are most effective at discouraging smoking among youth and low-income people. But tax increases are less effective at persuading heavy and long-term smokers to quit. Critics of cigarette taxes say they are regressive and disproportionately affect low-income people. The Senate will debate the proposed budget. It could then enter into a revision process, something that Pierce says we can expect.
The Indiana House of Representatives has approved a measure creating a new requirement for abortion providers to inform patients about so-called abortion reversal procedures. Under the bill, providers would have to issue information about abortion reversal to any patients seeking medically induced abortions. Medical abortions, which take around 48 hours, involve taking two different medications at a specific interval. Abortion reversal purports to reverse this process by administering a hormone shot after the first medication is taken. The director of Bloomington's All Options Pregnancy Resource Center, Shelley Dodson, gave this statement today responding to the bill's passage.
So there's no credible scientific evidence that supports the fact that medication abortion is reversible. It's extremely misleading to mandate telling pregnant people that this is an option. This is yet another example of Indiana legislators meddling in the reproductive decisions of Hoosiers. And HB 1128 serves to plant a seed of doubt in the validity of their decision to have an abortion and undermine science.
The procedure originated with a 2012 study by Dr. George Delgado, who claimed a 60% success rate in using progesterone to interrupt the medical abortion process. Since then, Delgado claims to have administered the procedure to several hundred women with a similar success rate. However, the initial study included only six women, and no other peer-reviewed science has validated the procedure. Abortion reversal is not FDA approved. The legislature's bill, which passed 54 to 41, adds to the long list of requirements placed on women seeking abortions, as Shelley Dodson explains.
So, in Indiana, there is requirement of an 18-hour waiting period. The ultrasound, there is a color, 24-page color booklet that is required by the Department of Health to be read and given to women prior to their abortion procedure. And there's also, the gestational limits and the minor informed consent law. And so those are all, those pieces aren't really about providing support. They aren't about providing better medical care to people. They're about creating more barriers to Hoosiers being able to access the abortion care that they need and deserve.
Supporters of the bill argue that it is important for women to know they have the option to change their minds during the course of a medical abortion. They acknowledge that the reversal is not guaranteed to work. Two other states have passed similar laws, and a third state passed a law but later repealed it following a court challenge. The bill now passes on to the Indiana Senate, which is in the process of drafting its own abortion legislation.
Five states in the U.S. do not have legislation targeting hate crimes, Indiana being one of them. A bill that would change that died once again in the Indiana legislature yesterday. The bill would have allowed judges to administer tougher sentences for crimes motivated by race, religion, sex, disability, gender identity, or sexual orientation. The Associated Press reports that the author of the bill, State Senator Sue Glick, said there was not enough support for her bill to move it forward. The bill failed on Monday, the same day the Indianapolis Jewish Community Center received a bomb threat.
A fundraising event tomorrow night is supporting the efforts of an organization that wants to help refugees move to Bloomington. Exodus Refugee Immigration is a nonprofit that helps refugees find housing, education, employment, and support. Tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Upland Brewing Company's event room, a fundraising event will feature the Nile Project, a 17-piece musical collective made up of artists from 11 countries. Their music combines diverse instruments, languages, and traditions, and some of the artists are refugees themselves. Tickets may be purchased online at exodusfundraiser.brownpapertickets.com. More information is available at 812-961-3485.
The need for foster parents in Indiana is greater than ever. The Villages of Indiana, the state's largest private therapeutic foster care provider, state in a press release that more than 23,000 Hoosier children need supportive foster families, up from about 12,000 3 years ago. The agency provides training and support to foster families and will host three informational sessions for those interested, April 18th, May 16th, and June 20th. Each 5:30 p.m. session lasts an hour and will be held at 2405 North Smith Pike in Bloomington. For more information or to register, call The Villages at 800-822-4888 or visit villageskids.org.
And the longtime director of Middleway House, Toby Strout, has died at the age of 71. Strout led the organization for almost three decades before retiring last year. Middleway House has a mission to end violence, both structural and interpersonal, in the lives of women and children. Strout oversaw major changes at the organization. During her tenure, Middleway added a rape crisis center, legal advocacy, and child care, along with other programs. The current executive director at Middleway House, Deborah Morrow, reflected today on Strout's influence in the local community.
She transformed lives. I think that is what we can most credit her for. During her time as executive director, over 60,000 individuals were impacted by the work that she did. And so when you think about our community and the surrounding counties that we serve, that's a huge impact on the community. So today, that's a huge loss for the community as well as our organization.
During her 30 years at Middleway House, Strout coordinated the development of The Rise, which is a transitional housing facility providing housing to families headed by women who have experienced life-threatening violence. The Rise opened in 1998. In 2010, under Strout's leadership, Middleway House opened the New Wings Domestic Violence Shelter in the historic Coca-Cola Bottling Company plant on South Washington Street. During a 2013 interview on WFHB's Interchange, Strout explained what it meant for her organization to target structural violence in the lives of women.
We work hard within our community to change institutions and to change attitudes and expectations so that women are treated fairly and are more likely to be believed and treated with respect when they report to law enforcement, when they find themselves in a courtroom. And then beyond that, where do they live that they can afford and that will be safe for them? Where do they work? And so we're trying to work on all those fronts so that we can provide meaningful alternatives to living with violence.
Middleway House has established what is called the Toby Strout Voices Fund, a place for people to donate in honor of Toby Strout, with all funds going directly to programs and outreach. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Don Guerra. Local entrepreneur Joe Davis is the creator of the Community Carbon Exchange, or CCX. Davis says carbon-saving actions like carpooling and walking, as well as adjustments in food and utility consumption, create a carbon offset that can be sold. Individuals and companies with larger carbon footprints can then buy that offset as a way to help mitigating their own impact on the environment. Reporter Sarah Vaughn talked with Davis to learn more about the initiative.
Would you just run down what the Community Carbon Exchange is?
Sure. The Community Carbon Exchange is a web-based platform that empowers people through the trading of personal carbon offsets. And the way that we do this is that we look at any given daily activity in the fields of transportation, meal consumption, and utility consumption initially. And, let's just say, for example, that an individual carpools to work, or maybe they have a fuel-efficient car, maybe they take the bus, maybe they bike or walk or do something like that. At any rate, we compare their activity to a baseline average of what a person would do in the local community. And if whatever their sort of mode of transportation or their meal consumption or utility consumption, whatever that might be, if it comes in underneath the baseline average, then we calculate how much carbon comparatively is saved from going up into the atmosphere. So then we take this saved carbon after we've measured it, then we monetize it by sort of flipping that saved carbon on its head and calling it a carbon offset. We apply a market rate for the price of carbon to that. And then all of a sudden, an individual has created a real tangible piece of property that has value. So then we take this piece of property that is owned by the producer, the generator, and then we find a local purchaser for it. This purchaser might be a local business, institution, or maybe even another individual. But what they all have in common is that they wish to mitigate their own carbon impact through the purchase of an individual's offset.
Where did you get the idea for the Community Carbon Exchange?
The C- seeds of the idea came from the time period when there were discussions taking place nationally about a cap and trade program for the U.S. And this was maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and there was this national discussion, and it essentially ended up going nowhere. And, you know, I found that extremely frustrating. So I knew that I represented a lot of people out there that were already doing lots of things in an everyday manner, and they were getting no recognition for it, and they were powerless in this whole debate. So it seemed to me what really needs to take place is that a voice needs to be given to the everyday individual so that they can feel empowered to engage in this discussion and to have some influence. And at the time, I felt like the only way to make that happen is to bring the cap-and-trade type of situation down to the personal level, to recognize people for their personal offsets that they create in reality with all these little sustainable gestures.
In a previous interview with us, Joe, you mentioned that there was a lot of good data out there about what specific behaviors result in carbon reduction. Are there specific behaviors that you're targeting with your initiative?
We initially addressed three major areas, individual transportation, meal consumption, and utility consumption. The reason we have chosen these areas is because, one, everyone has interacts in these ways just in their daily life. And there's a lot of really good scientific peer-reviewed data out there that establishes the carbon impact of various lifestyle modes. So we know when people are given feedback of how just the smallest gesture that they make actually represents real tangible CO2 either impact or reduction, we know that that feedback can influence their future decision making.
Because this program really does put the responsibility on individuals, can the actions of companies that are pumping pollution into the air, soil, and water really be mitigated by the actions of a small group of individuals through their carbon offsets?
They most certainly can. Let's just say, for example, that a trucking company that is moving freight across the country, we would be able to calculate exactly what just simply based on their fuel consumption. We can calculate, you know, down to the gram how much CO2 is going up into the atmosphere. Now, should that trucking company wish to move toward mitigating that carbon impact just solely based on their fuel consumption, then with enough people, we could bring their carbon impact down to a neutrality level.
Is there any incentive in the program for companies to buy the offsets? What would motivate them?
Well, companies essentially would be mostly looking at this program from a public relations angle. They would be more than likely taking money out of their marketing budget. When they would make a purchase of, you know, offsets and move toward carbon neutrality. So it's a unique way for them to also reach an audience that they didn't have contact with before.
And what companies have you approached to participate?
Well, we have been speaking with the types of companies in town that tend to cater to sort of folks who live kind of like healthy lifestyles and also to are into sustainability, as well the types of businesses that like to market themselves as local. Some of these companies that have expressed an interest are Lenny's. We have various media interest from Limestone Post Magazine, an online magazine, the Writer Magazine. We've got other groups like the Velours, the Hudsucker Posse, the Aerology High Flyers all have expressed some interest in, you know, mitigating their own carbon impact.
You mentioned that these transactions will be tracked in a transparent database.
It'll only be accessible to those who are generating the offsets and those who are purchasing the offsets. We want to protect the personal information. As far as an individual generator, they'll be able to look and see exactly how much they created in the way of carbon offsets, who purchased that offset, and vice versa. A business is going to be able to see who generated the offset they purchased, how much that was. And
this weekend you launched your Kickstarter campaign for funding to build the database. What's your dollar goal?
Actually, technically, our Kickstarter is still in the approval process, and we're hopeful that it will be up by the end of the week here. But the goal is to raise $7,000 to create the initial platform with a focus on transportation. If we are able to achieve that, then we expect that we'll be able to launch a beta in the next few months that will enable people to, start creating their profiles and become rewarded. We also are hoping that an additional $5,000 will be able to get the meal consumption elements of the platform up, and then with another additional $5,000 on top of that, then we'll be able to really work out all the particulars for the utility recognition as well. You know, we just want the world to know that we are serious in what we're trying to do, and that we really feel like we are going to be able to provide a voice and empower people to see the change that they wish to happen.
Thank you so much for your time, Joe. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Sarah.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
You can check out the Community Carbon Exchange online at ccx.col.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly Community Resources segment, Everyday People.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday Resources for Everyday People, connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Today we've got Amy Thompson, the County Extension Director with Monroe County, Purdue Extension. Thanks for being here. Can you try to tell us everything that Extension does?
Purdue Extension actually has an office located in every county in Indiana. Purdue offers programming in four different program areas: agriculture and natural resources, which includes home gardening. We get a lot of interest in home gardening. Mm-hmm. 4-H youth development, health and human sciences, and then community development. One of the programs that we currently have going on related to community development is the Monroe County Citizens Academy, which is a free program open to anyone who has an interest in learning more about Monroe County government, how it works, how government departments interact with the public, where their tax dollars go.
Uh-huh. Who does what within the county?
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yes. If you have a question, which department would you turn to? And a lot of people don't have a lot of background with local government. I had a great public education, but we focus mostly on national and state government and not a lot on what happens on the local level. We don't cover every department, but we try to highlight the departments where there's lots of public interaction,
right,
like the treasurer, where you pay your property taxes, and the highway department that fixes potholes and mm-hmm. those kind of things. So we talk about the court system. We actually tour the jail. And you get to talk with elected officials and department heads. And, you know, if you've had a burning question forever and
right.
didn't know who the go-to person was, you can get answers to your questions. So
what's, if someone wanted to go ahead and find out more about the Monroe County Citizens Academy and how, where to go, where to show up, where would they get that information?
They can call our office. Okay. Our phone number is 812-349-2575. You're also welcome to email me. My email is Thompson, Thompson@Purdue, www.indianaelectric.edu. And it's an opportunity to educate yourself to be a better voter,
right,
also.
More right. informed yeah. about yes. how these departments
you know,
work.
You have to select somebody on that auditor right. ballot. And
yeah. don't know what, who they are.
And what the heck does the auditor do?
Right. So, yeah. And local for. Is often where you're right. going to see the most changes.
Yes.
Right.
In your own personal lives, you know, as far as elections and politics.
And there's a lot of impact on your life
absolutely.
From local government
yes.
that
yeah.
people
don't realize.
Right, right, right.
So you mentioned earlier the gardening, and what is that? Because I'm a terrible gardener.
Right. So besides offering educational programming, we offer lots of free resources. So if you had some burning gardening question, you can contact us. You want to plant? You've planted blueberries, and they've never done well.
Right.
I might have some insight into why they might not have done well in our Monroe County soils.
So, Amy is the gardening guru.
So I would be happy to help provide you with resources, answer questions. I do that kind of thing year round. I also coordinate the Master Gardener Program, which is a volunteer program. People become trained volunteers. They go through a 14-week basically 41-hour course on gardening, and then they go out to share that knowledge with the public. If people want to reach out to us, again, our phone number is 812-349-2575.
Amy Thompson, County Extension Director with Purdue Extension in Monroe County. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Simon Williams, Kate O'Rourke, Joe Crawford, Jared Dill, and Kathy Norton. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Matt Griffin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.